So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
Welcome to our weekly marriage hour here on Trending. Today is known as Ascension Thursday, but also the feast day of Our Lady of Fatima. In your diocese, Ascension Thursday may have been moved to celebrating the Ascension on Sunday. Most kind of northeastern dioceses celebrate it today, but most of the rest of the nation has reserved that special day for Sunday. Either way, you can celebrate the Ascension. You can also celebrate today Our Lady of Fatima. And it's only been not that long. What, 104 years since Our Lady of Fatima appeared? She's always held a special place in my heart for a couple reasons. One, her apparition really occurred within a couple years of the birth of my great-grandmother, who I grew up very, very close to, and whom my great-grandmother had a very profound devotion to her, Our Lady of Fatima, but also the church I grew up in. If you've ever been to Lake Arrowhead in Southern California, it's a mountain community. We had a beautiful church called Our Lady of the Lake, and beautiful, you know, you wouldn't think anything fancy about it from the outside. It's nothing fancy at all. And then you walk in, and these beautiful high wood beams throughout the inside. And then the back of the church is floor-to-ceiling windows looking out on a shrine of Our Lady of Fatima. It is an absolutely beautiful and riveting parish and place to remember Our Lady and to see the three visionaries who we know so well in the 21st century. They're just pondering Our Lady. And so, you know, during Mass, I'd always ponder Our Lady at Fatima and these three visionaries, Jacinta, Lucia, and Francisco, who Sister Lucia died not that long ago. There's so much of this, I think, apparition and the reality of these saints that is so current for all of us. And so this is part of what I love about Our Lady of Fatima. We're going to unpack her during the entire hour. Joining me in a little bit will be Joe Sikora from The Joe Sikora Show. And we'll be talking about marriage in relation to Fatima from this perspective. The perspective that Our Lady of Fatima gave many visions along with the angels appearing to the three visionaries. But we actually have in a letter that Cardinal Caffara received from Sister Lucia of Fatima, where she wrote and she said this: "The final battle between the Lord and the kingdom of Satan will be about marriage and the family." And so we're going to be discussing this in relation to our weekly marriage hour here on Trending. We'll also discuss your questions with marriage and family therapist Joe Sikora. So if you have a question about marriage, challenges, what is a threat to your marriage, why you don't get along, or even perhaps why you've chosen not to get married, give us a call. The number is 1-888-914-9149. Marriage and family therapist Joe Sikora will be joining me in just a little bit. I'll also discuss the unpacking of the story of former Bachelor star Colton Underwood. He came out a few weeks ago identifying as gay, and news came out this week that he actually was manipulated into sharing his so-called identity. We'll talk about that, and also the vision of hell that the Blessed Virgin Mary gave three young children at Fatima, and what this can teach us about prayer and fasting, as we've been on this theme this week, talking about prayer. So Our Lady at Fatima spoke to Sister Lucia, and she's not a saint yet. And one of the comments that was made has always struck me because I've been involved in the pro-marriage and pro-life movement. And we've seen this radical battle surrounding family, motherhood, sexual identity, marriage, the type of lifestyle we'll live as married people or not live with declining marriage rates. And so this quote has stood out. Cardinal Caffara received this message from Sister Lucia, who said, "The final battle between the Lord and the kingdom of Satan will be about marriage and the family." But then she goes on to say, "Don't be afraid," she added, "because whoever works for the sanctity of marriage and the family will always be fought against and opposed in every way. Because this is the decisive issue." Then she concluded, Nevertheless, Our Lady has already crushed his head. This final message is something that we need to be reminded of over and over again, that the kingdom of heaven has already triumphed. The battle has been won, but there's a battle taking place for individual souls. This is why things such as prayer, fasting, the sacraments, conformity to Christ matter so much in our individual lives. And why we are called to be a witness to break into the lives of others and to even make intercession for them and reparation for them. This is part of the message of Fatima. But I find it fascinating that Sister Lucia emphasized that the final battle will be between the kingdom of Satan and the Lord surrounding marriage and family and the issues of marriage and family. Because we live at a time when there's tremendous confusion, and it's only getting worse to the point where not only are we in a anti-marriage culture, but we're also in a culture that doesn't know how it will identify. Does it identify as male or female? Does it identify as Christian, agnostic, atheist? All of these so-called identifying landmarkers are confusing us about who we will be, how we interact. And ultimately, it's destroying the idea of eternal beatitude, eternal union with God. And so we have to have hope that Jesus Christ is right when he talks about marriage, that he's given us a plan, and that the graces of the sacraments are truly enough. And so as we unpack this, it's so important that during our weekly marriage hours, we're answering the practical questions about marriage, which is why we bring our marriage and family therapists on. This is why we talk about what the ideal of marriage is, what the biblical teaching is, what the catechism says about marriage and family, but also why people aren't subscribing to it. And so in just a little bit, we'll talk about what's preventing young people from choosing marriage, especially from a psychological perspective. But joining me now here on Trending, if you're just joining us, thanks for joining me. You can share this episode at relevantradio.com/trending. Invite others to listen. Joe Sikora is a marriage and family therapist. He's well known for the Joe Sikora Show. He has a past in everything from acting, being a stunt double, to law enforcement. I don't know what you haven't done, Joe, but here we want to work on some of this wisdom, especially surrounding marriage and family.
Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me on. This is a real, real honor. And you are bringing me on to talk about a subject that I am so passionate about, is marriage. And for a lot of reasons, I was listening to you, of course, introduce the whole idea of how we can, you know, really become sanctified in marriage. And I want to address, as a therapist, you know, because I hear this every day, what are the practical reasons? Why should we be married? Why should we work on a marriage that seems to be crumbling beneath us? And I want to say right now, again, if you're struggling with a marriage, you're not alone. I mean, the divorce rate is astronomically high among people right now. But there are things, there are practical things that you can do to actually find connection with marriage. And I think, Tim Marie, the first question might be, and you're posing a lot of great questions. I want to take this in whatever order you want. But a lot of people ask the question, first of all, what causes divorce? What causes divorce? And if you were just to sort of simplify that question, or the answer rather, I would say this. People talk about infidelity. They talk about stresses caused by financial, job problems, parenting. There's all kinds of reasons that people point to and say, this is causing the demise of my marriage. But if you were to think about one thing, to summarize everything, all the reasons people give for a marriage falling apart, I want you to think about it like this. There is one thing that causes divorce, and that is distance. Anything in life, there are all kinds of stressors, but it is distance that causes divorce. So if you're struggling with a job, if you're struggling with communication, if you're struggling because of in-laws, whatever it is, those things that push you apart are what threaten the marriage. And so I think the next question is, you know, why stay married? Why fight really hard? If you're already feeling really miserable in this relationship right now, why stay married? Well, you can answer this. I think you've already addressed this from a spiritual standpoint, you know, because God wants you to live this committed relationship. Marriage as a sacrament But also from a purely psychological standpoint, a healthy marriage actually promotes health and longevity. Men in particular live about 5 years longer if they are happily married. So you can eat all the carrots and vegetables you want. You can exercise. But if you really want to be healthy, work on your relationship. So that's what I tell my wife. It's like, I'm just going to eat the chocolate cake because the marriage is good, so I'll be fine. But so that's the first thing to remember is that's distance that causes it. But there are a lot of strong reasons to stay married and work on that marriage.
Joe, there are a couple questions that have come in for you. And if you have a question for marriage and family therapist Joe Sikora, you know him from the Joe Sikora show that we used to have here on Trending. Some of the questions have to do with a spouse following inappropriate accounts on social media. This was asked on Instagram. How do you handle that when your spouse is following something inappropriate?
Yeah, that's a great one. There are all kinds of distractions. I mean, you could talk about inappropriate content anywhere, whether it's pornography or, you know, just some of the television shows or Instagram or wherever you're following. You know, all of these things distract us. And I would go about answering it this way. I would sit down, and if you were married and there was something that your spouse was doing, following some inappropriate content, I would first bring it up and say, look, I really want to be closer to you, husband or wife. I want to be closer to you. What are the things that we can do to draw closer together? Because this is kind of hurting me. This kind of seems like this is something that's separating us. And so I would go about it that way to begin with. Now, there are a lot of reasons why people engage in destructive behaviors like pornography or addiction. And to answer that, to find out why you're really pursuing those kinds of negative or destructive influences is a deeper question. But I would begin by spinning it, by turning it around and say, what can we do to become closer? Because if you build real health in a relationship, you might find there is less need for distraction or following something else. When your spouse becomes that person that you really want to be with, that you really enjoy giving that attention to, getting that attention from, then sometimes some of those other things will just drift apart. Does that drift away? Does that make sense?
It does make sense. And it kind of begs the second question of kind of those warning signs that I think we all notice. Like perhaps you're talking to someone of the opposite sex a little too much. You start to go, oh, I wonder why this is happening. I wonder why I'm allowing this to occur. Or, you know, you start seeking out certain pleasures and you kind of have this gut reaction, Joe, at first of like, I do recognize that something's off here, and we can either acknowledge that as our conscience kicking in a little bit, or we could totally bulldoze past it and start to make excuses. How can we be better when our conscience does kick in, even if it's something that's not that big of a deal at first?
Yeah, well, the conscience, the whole idea of guilt is a good thing. Sometimes people confuse guilt with shame. Guilt is that sense of, hey, I've done something wrong, and inside me, I feel that. I don't feel good about that. And that can be something good that can actually prompt us to move towards something healthier, to do something good. So guilt can be a really good thing. People talk or joke sometimes or say, oh, Catholic guilt. Well, guilt's a good thing, actually. Shame, which sometimes people confuse with guilt, shame is something different. Shame is, I am bad. Guilt is, I have done something bad. I can change that behavior. Shame is, I am bad. I am unworthy. I am unlovable. And that's something deeper that has to be addressed. I mean, sometimes, quite honestly, in therapy, it's like, well, why do you have that sense that you are bad, that you are unlovable, that you should be in a destructive relationship or something like that? Those are some of those deeper, more difficult questions to answer, I think. But I think talking about, you know, guilt and what is wrong is okay if we don't feel like we're just pointing the finger again at our spouse. You're doing this and this is wrong. Because then what that does is that sets up sort of a fighting dynamic where you're accusing each other of what you're doing wrong. I would say if you really want to help to shape a more positive, loving behavior in a marriage, is come together and sit and say, you know what, I'm really struggling with this. And listen attentively, you know, lovingly, non-judgmentally. And then you too take the other side and say, yeah, these are my struggles. How can we come together to grow closer to God, to grow closer to each other? So rather than pointing fingers and saying you're doing this wrong, it's okay to say, hey, when you do this, that hurts me. It doesn't make me feel good. But we want to be careful about just pointing out all the flaws that we see in our spouse. Mm-hmm. We don't normally react too well to that.
That's Joe Sikora here on Trending with Timmer. You can find him at callingsong.com. So you mentioned one thing of distance being a key thing that can kind of impact marriages. But what would be a second key thing impacting marriages today that you see in the counseling room?
Well, you know, people come in with all kinds of problems, you know, stresses over parenting or really legitimate difficult issues, you know, I mean, financial stressors or sick children or, you know, there are a number of those things. So the list is, you know, could go on and on. Well, this is our problem and this is our problem and this is our problem. But there are no, this is kind of a funny way to say it. Every problem, if you look at it as an obstacle to be encountered together, hey, this is an opportunity for you and me to address this stressor together, then it's no longer really problems. It's not a problem-saturated story. It's an opportunity to come closer together. But when people come to me or other therapists, typically what they're doing, Timmery, is they're saying, you're the problem. You're no good. And then the fight ensues. You know, then we get defensive and we say, no, you're the problem. You're doing this. And you've got to turn it around. You've got to, rather than just sort of saturate your life in problems, you got to say, what are the solutions? You've got to be willing to look and work on solutions together. So the problems are endless, but it's always, how can we grow closer together? So if your spouse came to you and said, hey, you know, you're doing this and it really hurts me, the follow-up should be, okay, what can we do? Rather than as me doing something wrong or you doing something wrong, what can we do to actually draw closer together?
It's a changing of dynamics. I think sometimes we think, okay, well, the other person has to change in order to fix this because they're doing X. But so often when one person changes, the whole unit changes and reacts and responds. Even if not perfectly, it does help grow and increase the situation from being kind of whatever it might have become in its messiness.
Yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, a lot of times people will say, well, I don't want to go to couples counseling because you're the problem. And in that case, I would say, look, whether you're in, you know, seeing a therapist or just working on your own life, you know, to promote growth and health and spiritual vitality within yourself, that can actually be the impetus for the other person to say, wow, you're really so much more positive and loving. And that can draw them into a dynamic that is more positive and hopeful. So no matter what the other person is doing, you know, you always want to take the responsibility for your life and say, okay, what can I do so that I can grow, so that I can be more godlike?
Another question came in on Instagram. And if you have a question for marriage and family therapist Joe Sikora, the number is 1-888-914-9149. You're listening to Trending with Timmery. A question came in from Diane on Instagram. She said, I'm worried that I will be taken for granted again as I was in my first marriage. How do you address this issue of feeling taken for granted?
Boy, that's a big one. And thank you for that question. A thought comes up first to me when you said that. I don't want to be taken advantage of like I was in my first marriage. Mm-hmm. So what that tells me, again, I'm not sure, I haven't talked to this person, but that gives me a little window into looking at this person and saying, you know what, where have you felt this? When did this begin? How did you establish this notion that you're being taken advantage of? Now, she might be taken advantage of. I'm not denying that. But she also could be set up to believe that her husband is taking advantage of her because he's doing this or that. But if she finds, hey, this is consistent, now I'm seeing this in my second marriage, that might be something more deeply rooted in her own life, where she felt like her needs weren't met as a child. I know that sounds a little psychobabbly, but it's true. Sometimes we have these experiences in childhood where we say, gosh, I was always taken advantage of. And maybe that is absolutely the truth, right? But you have to go back and sometimes heal those early wounds to say, you know what, I deserve to be in a relationship where I'm not being taken advantage of. I deserve to be treated well. I deserve to be treated with love. And when you do that, then you may begin, you know, demanding or living out those relationships with that expectation of, hey, I deserve love and this is what I expect. So there could be a lot of reasons why she feels like she is being taken advantage of, and it could absolutely be legitimate. I'm not saying otherwise. But she first has to come to that belief that she deserves to be treated decently and with love. And then she can begin to have that expectation and kind of gently demand, if you will, to be loved as she deserves. It's such a great question. I wish I had about 45 minutes to answer that, but that's kind of the short version.
And going back to the root is so important, because often this feeling of being taken for granted, or a lot of the experiences and emotions that come up in marriage, they didn't just start there in marriage. And grant, this can be something that your spouse is absolutely doing to you. However, sometimes when we're used to functioning in a damaged relationship, we choose those types of relationships moving forward, but they can be healed. And that's why I think Catholic therapy is so important. Can you speak briefly, Joe, to why finding specifically a Catholic therapist is so important?
You know, I probably get more calls from people who say, I need a Catholic therapist. As much as I'm proud of being a Catholic who is a therapist, what you really need is somebody really good, first of all, who respects your faith, mm-hmm. but then who can go back, who believes in healing, who can go back and explore those initial early on hurts with you. For instance, if you were finding, Timory, you know, in your relationship, like, oh, gosh, I'm always getting angry. You know, what my husband does always gets me so angry. And I would ask, well, what are the causes of that? Well, he leaves his socks on the floor. And I get so outraged and so angry. You know, I would want to go back as a Catholic therapist and as a secular therapist, quite honestly. I would want to go back and say, well, what are the roots of that anger? You know, why is it that you have to go to anger to actually maybe feel protected? Because a lot of times, for instance, people get really angry because it's the one emotion that makes them feel powerful. And so I'd say, well, what is it that's causing you, you know, what deep down, where, you know, going back in life, where did you find that anger was what was necessary? And maybe you grew up with angry parents. There could be a whole host of reasons. But you want somebody who respects your faith, that's for sure.
That's Joe Secor, marriage and family therapist here on Trending with Timory. You can find him at callingsong.com or Catholic therapist at catholictherapist.com. We'll be back talking about what's preventing young people from choosing marriage. Maybe that's you. Give us a call.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Welcome back to Trending during our weekly Marriage Hour. It's great to be with you. It's the feast day of Our Lady of Fatima. Perhaps also your diocese is celebrating Ascension Thursday. Other dioceses are celebrating it this Sunday. Don't worry if that was your diocese case. We have calls coming in. If you'd like to ask a question of Joe Secor, the number is 1-888-914-9149. He's a marriage and family therapist. And we're taking up the topic of what's preventing young people from choosing marriage. And Joe, Abby from St. Louis is on the line, and she's sharing her thoughts about getting married. Abby, what's your question or comment?
I'm so sorry, my daughter's in the background, but we have actually, I'm a convert, and so I don't have, like, the best answer for my cousins and family members, but we have actually two weddings this year, and both of them are not getting married in the Catholic Church, but they are both Catholic, so I was just wondering what, like, an answer, a loving response to that question that's kind of going on in the family right now of why they should get married in the Catholic Church. I'm so sorry, my daughter.
Don't worry, we love kids here. It's great. You're a mom. My daughter makes noise in the background too here sometimes.
Yeah, I love it. I love to hear little babies back there in the background yelling and screaming. That's family. That's what it means to be Catholic is family, right? I mean, one of the things. Yeah, it's a tough question. What do you say to somebody who says, yeah, we're getting married, but not in the Catholic Church? You can just explore that with people. You can ask them about that. I think a lot of people feel estranged and disconnected from each other and from their faith. I think some of that is because of the pandemic. I think there's a lot of reasons why people are sort of venturing out or getting lost or losing their roots in their Catholic identity or faith. So I don't think there's an easy answer there. I mean, to me, I married a Baptist woman, you know, she's since converted. She became Catholic. I guess the question could have been asked of me, why didn't you marry somebody who was Catholic? I don't know. I just fell in love with this beautiful young woman and we figured it out as we went, but God drew us back in. So that we could share our faith more completely. It's a tough one when other people aren't doing this. So I don't know that there's a great answer that I could give you. You know, what do you say to somebody? You can just ask them, but I think the best thing that we can do to evangelize is to share our faith is for other people to see the joy that we have in our faith. You know, be that source of light, that source of connection, so other people can say, wow, your life is tough, but you're so joyful, you're so happy. What is that? Then you can bring them into a conversation about how your faith actually is at the root of your health. So that's what I would do, is you got to just ask the question. But you asked another question too, Tim Marie. It's like, why are people waiting to get married? And that's a great question. It's really two-sided. It's not all bad, but it's not all good. There, when they look at the numbers of divorce, they say there's kind of a sweet spot, you know, and this could change. Right now, it's like between 28 and 32. It's like, yeah, that seems to be good years to get married. Now, I got married when I was 23, and I'm still married, well, decades later. So things are working out pretty well, right? But I would say this. Here's the real danger. Here's what I see as a trend with young people right now is living together before they get married. And here's the problem. Even if I wasn't Catholic, I would discourage people from doing that. And here's why. Because the divorce rate is about 10% higher for those who live together before getting married. And the question is, well, why? And this is kind of what goes to it is what we've become sort of as a younger group, not we, I won't include myself any longer in that group. But what's happening is we're saying, let me try this out. It's like, you know, you go to buy a car. It's like, take the car home, try it out. And with marriage, it doesn't really work because we live in and we say, I'm going to try this person out and see if it works out. And if it works out, then we'll get married. But what happens is you don't ever really commit. There's never that definitive, you don't make that definitive, you are the one I am choosing to marry. You know, in good times and in bad, it's a very definitive choice. And what happens and what psychologists and researchers think, the reason why it falls apart is because people just sort of slide into marriage. It's like, well, you know, we've been living together for 5 years and mom and dad and friends are saying, well, why don't you get married? So you, at some point you just say, we should get married. And so you just sort of slide into that.
You know, it's what's the difference? We're living together already. Let's kind of just make it happen, even though there's a fear about it as well.
Well, there's a fear to, you know, on one side we think, I should be married, right? That would be better. That would be a public pronouncement of my love and my commitment to you. But you know, a lot of times we just say, I should do it. So we should get married. And then you, all of a sudden you get married and you say, oh, wow, you're actually not the person of my dreams. And then you get divorced. So the divorce rate, again, it's about 10% higher if you live together before getting married. But I think what we've done is we've become sort of afraid of commitment. We've been afraid of just saying, I choose you.
Now, isn't that funny? Just for a second, we have a divorce rate, you know, you can look at numbers, relatively 50% of marriages when you actually do get married end up in divorce, but then that means add 10%, about 6 out of 10 then end up divorcing if they lived together first. And isn't it ironic because so often many people actually do move in together because they have a fear of divorce because it's something they themselves experience, whether it's abandonment from parents, separation from parents. And so that fear is compiled with a choice that is actually contributing even further to a divorce culture that they're so desperately trying to avoid.
Yes, yes, yes. You're exactly right. You're exactly right. Second marriages fail on average about 10% higher than first marriages. So if you take your 50% number, which is about right, second marriages fail at about a 60% rate, and third marriages fail at about a 70% rate. Now, here's what's funny. What I think about, because divorce is, ask anybody who's been through divorce, you know, scripture says God hates divorce. I think anybody who's been divorced would say the same thing. Yes, I agree. I hate divorce. But they're so miserable, they say, I can't stand living like this. And I totally understand that. I'm not one who advocates staying married in a miserable marriage. But you can turn that marriage around. And that's what people think. People think, well, this marriage is no good. It can't be repaired. But there is hope. Most relationships, and Catholic therapists, other Christian therapists and secular therapists, actually, we all sort of agree that most marriages can be saved. And we forget that. We lose hope. We give up. It seems so dark, we can't ever imagine it. If you think about it this way, right, if you've ever had the flu or COVID, right, be more relevant, or something like that, when you're that sick, it's hard to imagine feeling healthy again. You know, when you're throwing up and you're just, oh, this is so terrible. It's hard to even imagine feeling good. And that's how people look at marriage sometimes when they're miserable. They're thinking it can't be any better. And I would say a trick, if you were to do this, if you're really struggling right now in your marriage, and I have great heart and empathy for you if you're struggling, but go back rather than just focusing on the problems and focusing on what is wrong with the relationship. Go back, and I would encourage you to do this as a couple. Reflect on the good times. Ask yourself, rather than saying, hey, let's talk about the problems tonight, say, hey, honey, let's take a break from the fighting. Let's think about and remember all the wonderful things that we did do in our relationship. You know, what was that, whenever that was, when we took that trip, when we used to go out and play and have fun or go to the beach or those fun things. Focus on those fun things, those good things, the memorable times, the meaningful times, because that will awaken in you again that hope. It's like, well, wait a second. Yes, yes, be grateful. So sometimes we have to shake ourselves out of that malaise or that depression or the despair that we feel that things can't ever get better.
You know, I keep coming back to Abby's question that she asked from St. Louis about, you know, how do you convince people who are Catholic but are choosing to not get married in the Catholic Church? This kind of hits the nail on the head, Joe, when it comes to why young people are choosing not to get married. Like, what's happening psychologically? Well, when we throw God out the door, when we get rid of religion, religion is, in many cultures, not just Catholicism, religion is part of what upholds marriage. There's some form of marriage in almost every culture, but we've removed ourselves from our cultural roots that have always historically had roots in some type of religion. And what's happened is, unless you have a family of origin that holds on to the belief of marriage or some form of usually Christianity or other type of spirituality, that's been lost. And so I think that that's a really key thing, that some people have kind of just been going through the motions and going to church, but they're not really seeing that it actually does take three to get married, which is an incredible book that I want to recommend by Venerable Fulton Sheen. And just one quote that stands out to me in that, when he emphasizes this idea that you need the spouses and God in the marriage, is he says, without God, people only succeed in bringing out the worst in one another. And I've thought that that comment, Joe, is so profound. And here's the reason why, and I want your thoughts on this. So often, we mistake marriage for how it makes me feel good. And the purpose of marriage is to make me feel good, rather than joining together in a mission together of sacrifice. What are your thoughts in terms of this reaction that so many of us have? Well, I no longer feel in love. I no longer feel happy, or he's not making me happy, or she's making me feel useless.
That's such a great point, Timory. You know, there's nothing wrong with feelings. Feelings can alert us if things are going well or things are going badly, but feelings aren't necessarily indicative of truth. And sometimes, again, you know, the whole idea of, you know, the book that you're talking about, It Takes Three, is couples, first of all, have to humble themselves together before God. That's the first thing. It's like it's not me over you or anything like that, but we come together before God. Our faith, and most faiths, aren't just about feeling good, right? As Catholics, very specifically, you walk into a Catholic church and what do you see? Jesus up on a cross, you know, the crucifix. We don't run from it. Jesus didn't say, you know, follow me and you'll be happy. In fact, sometimes he says just the opposite, follow me and pick up your cross. And sometimes we have to go into a marriage with the same idea. Look, I'm not getting married so that you can make me happy, right? I'm getting married because this marriage can make me holy, you know, can help to sanctify me. And the psychological research, too, actually supports this. The truth is, we think, oh, if I'm doing a lot of things for myself, then I'll be happy. Just the opposite, quite honestly. Sometimes when depressed people come to me, what I will say, and this is based on research, this isn't just my idea of what makes sense, is I'll say, get outside of yourself. If you're depressed, chances are you're focusing too much, possibly. And I'm oversimplifying here. Again, there's, you know, depression is very complex. But if you're focusing too much on yourself, you're more likely, and your problems are more likely to just contribute to that depression. But if you get outside of yourself and focus on others, you know, give to yourself, give to the poor, give to your neighbor, give to those in need, your focus will go from your problems onto others. And when we give to others, when we love others, guess what? We also feel better. So we can't just let feelings dictate what we do. In fact, I would challenge you to do this. You know, if you're listening right now, I'd say this.
Homework.
If you're feeling, you know, if you're feeling down or depressed, even if you don't feel like it, go home tonight, wrap your arms around your spouse, give him or her a giant hug, and tell them how much you love them. Just hold in that embrace. And after that, tell me if your feelings don't change. Mm-hmm. Chances are you will feel better after you've done that act. So we can't let feelings always dictate what we do. Sometimes we got to do the right thing, knowing that feelings will follow. Does that make sense?
Absolutely. You know, we got some kissing advice from Lieutenant Colonel Dave Grossman here on Trending Today. It's Joe Secor, marriage and family therapist, giving more advice and homework to bless our marriages, to sanctify our marriages. Phone caller Jerry from Madison, Wisconsin, actually commented, and he said, I'm shocked that Joe Secora said he doesn't advocate staying married in a miserable marriage. And great catch. And just to clarify, Joe was saying, don't stay in a miserable marriage, that all marriages are redeemable. That's what the message was there, that we can't just leave things as the status quo. And this is where, you know, Impossible Marriages Redeemed by Layla Miller is an excellent resource. But do you want to just follow up on that comment as well, Joe?
Absolutely. You might be miserable. And what I'm saying is you don't have to stay miserable. It doesn't mean get divorced, because chances are you might get remarried and find yourself back in the same misery. So what I'm saying is work through it. You know, strive for that joyful, loving, compassionate, tender relationship. Stay right where you are. You know, again, the statistics are the second marriage isn't going to go any better. So we really do have that great potential to have a wonderful marriage. And those happy, loving marriages is what supports a happy, healthy life. So no, I'm not advocating getting divorced if you're miserable. Just the opposite. What I'm saying is get help. Don't just stay miserable. Get help with it.
Excellent. That's Joe Secora from The Joe Secora Show. He's a marriage and family therapist. You can find him at callingsong.com. I'll be back here on Relevant Radio to discuss the pressure that one of the former Bachelor stars received to come out as so-called gay. We'll also discuss Our Lady of Fatima and what she can teach us about prayer today on her feast day. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timmery on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
You may recall a couple weeks ago here on the show, news came out that former Bachelor star Colton Underwood came out as identifying as gay. Not only that, it was said that he is Catholic. And there was a big to-do made about him being Catholic and having Catholic guilt about his so-called sexual identity. And they were intentionally trying to show that, hey, here's a Catholic who doesn't follow what the church teaches. I'm going to post a link in the show notes and right now on social media to that episode, because I think it's a really important conversation to listen to about how people tried to use his Catholicism to create confusion surrounding same-sex attraction and so on. But what I want to talk about now is something quite different. News came out today that Bachelor star Colton Underwood was actually blackmailed into coming out as gay. Now, I think this is fascinating. A little bit of risque information here. The news is that he was blackmailed into coming out because questionable photos of him were obtained by someone of him at a gay spa. Facilitates that. Now, what happened is, then once these photos were held against him, then he came out. Now, lo and behold, it's turned into him using his story. I think he even signed a deal with Netflix or somewhere to talk about his coming out. It's become a cash cow now as well. But why? Why is this happening? Number one, the media is clinging on to the fact that this man, who is a Bachelor star, who has a story, who felt pressured to try and make it work in a heterosexual relationship, well, he was Catholic, and his Catholic guilt got to him. And they're trying to make it clear that this is part of his story. They're trying to debunk and destroy the Catholic understanding of marriage and family and the human anthropology, which we talked a lot about yesterday here on Trending. If you missed the podcast, head over to relevantradio.com/trending to discuss. But also, the question is, why was he blackmailed into sharing a story? It wasn't just because of his Catholic faith. It's because there's a culture we live in where there's a battle over the issue of identity politics that says if you have any sort of inclination that isn't heterosexual, that you're suddenly so-called gay. That's not true. My dear friend, marriage and family therapist Michael Gasparo, who works with a lot of people who experience same-sex attraction, has always commented on this. Why is it that you can be sexually fluid, but only if you swing in the direction of same-sex attraction? But you can't be fluid if perhaps you've had some proclivities from same-sex attraction, but you can't swing back toward the sexuality of your biological reality and the complementarity. Why is that? Because today's identity politics wants to peg people in this sort of ideology and tell people that they can't change. This is just who you are. This goes radically against what our faith believes. That human people have an intellect, they can come to know right from wrong, and they have free will, and they can freely choose it out of love, out of sacrifice, out of compassion, out of mercy. It's so important that we do not allow the culture, by identifying in politics, identity politics, to create a sense of hopelessness in us, to identify us according to our sins we struggle with. We can't let others or ourselves shut the door on human freedom, flourishment, change, and a future ultimately. It's so important that we remember this. 1 Peter chapter 5, our first pope, who he himself struggled with the temptation of the enemy, who denied Christ and abandoned Christ on the cross. He says this, "Be sober and alert. Your opponent, the devil, is prowling around like a roaring lion, seeking someone to devour." Why is this important? Because each and every single one of us have that temptation to cave into an identity politics that defines us according to our sin. The only identity politics that we should identify in is human Catholic anthropology that understands that we have an intellect and free will. We are capable of love. We are capable of choices, even in the midst of our temptations. This is important today. Why? Because today, my friend, is a feast day of Our Lady of Fatima. Our Lady of Fatima gave the three young visionaries, Jacinta, Lucia, and Francisco, a vision of hell. Three little children. In fact, in that vision of hell, she opened her hands and rays of light penetrated the earth, and they saw a sea of fire. Lucia cried in terror to the Virgin Mother as she saw what she saw in this vision of hell. Demons and souls in human form. We read that they were raised in the air by flames that issued from within. They talk about how the demons were distinguished. I quote, "terrifying and repellent likenesses to frightful and unknown crimes." These three young children received a glimpse into what happens when we use our free will to choose to not follow our conscience, to choose to abandon God, to abandon basic human anthropology. Yet Our Lady gave another tender, tender message. She called souls to pray and fast, not just for themselves, but for others, to make reparation to God for the sins of other people, specifically addressing that in our time, sins of the flesh are one of the greatest challenges taking souls to hell. Jacinta, actually, one of the three visionaries, later revealed that according to Our Lady, quote, "the sins which cause most souls to go to hell are the sins of the flesh." At what point will you and I say enough is enough and we're going to stop making excuses for the culture we live in that's leaving so many of us with battle scars from this pervasive attitude? When will we take seriously that the devil is real, that hell is real, that heaven is our goal? Heaven is what we're created for. Where we're created to be. I keep thinking of the prayer. I don't know if you know this, but when we pray our rosary, there's the Oh My Jesus prayer. Oh My Jesus, forgive us our sins. Save us from the fires of hell. Lead all souls to heaven, especially those who are most in need of your mercy. Did you know this was a prayer given by Our Lady of Fatima to the three young visionaries? This is a prayer that we must continue to work on daily. There's something profound that's been occurring in all of the Marian apparitions of the last couple hundred years. What? Over and over again, she shares the same exact message, that we need to pray and fast and engage in mortification. Mortification, making sacrifices, eradicating sin from our lives, interceding for others, our family members, our children, nieces, nephews, parents, marriages, for the unborn, women facing crisis pregnancy. This week we've been talking about prayer and how we can grow in a deeper prayer life, not just a superficial prayer life that just utters a few prayers here and there when you remember to, but a prayer life that elevates the mind, heart, soul, and body to God. There is a prayer that the angel at Fatima, because there was an angel that appeared as well, taught the three young visionaries, and it was this: "My God, I believe, I adore, I hope, and I love you. I beg pardon for those who do not believe, nor adore, nor hope, nor love you." This prayer along with the prayer I just mentioned that we pray during the rosary, the Oh My Jesus prayer. These prayers are to remind us to make reparation for others. It begins with prayer, but it also includes fasting. Remember when Jesus Christ came down from Mount Tabor and he met with his apostles, they were having a hard time casting out a demon. Why? Well, Jesus said something very important. Some demons are only cast out with prayer and fasting. Let's battle those demons and the sins in our lives, making intercession for ourselves and intercession for others. You want to grow in your prayer life? Unite your prayer to fasting and offer your fasting and your prayer for someone. For some sacrifice, from some sin that you need to overcome, for some person that's in a difficult situation. Prayer changes things. When we make sacrifices for others in our prayer, when we unite our prayer and fasting together for a special intention to God, things change. I want to encourage with you to join me in praying this prayer. Repeat after me. It was taught to the young visionary by an angel at Fatima, and I've posted some prayers as well on my social media, especially check out Instagram, but pray with me and follow along. My God, I believe, I adore, I hope, and I love you. I beg pardon for those who do not believe, nor adore, nor hope, nor love you. We ask Our Lady of Fatima to pray for us, to help us grow in our prayer lives, and mortification and sacrifice for others. I'll be back here tomorrow, and we'll play a game of getting to know you.